The world is changing at breathtaking speeds, with trends and fads popping up and passing away at breakneck pace. Against that backdrop of nearly constant upheaval, we welcome you to the Sunday Scotch Society. Over delectable, sumptuous scotches and with the occasional good cigar in hand, we have open, honest, and uninhibited conversation about whatever strikes our fancy. Whether it's the critical issue of the day or a deep dive down the rabbit hole, we take it all seriously while having a good time. Join us for a stiff drink and a great conversation. All right, sir. Good day to you.
Good morrow.
Yes, and how does this fine morrow find you, Matthew? Are you leaning into the B of the Matthew B. Kelly? or are you laid back and simply Matthew? Oh, by the way, folks, welcome to the Sunday Scotch Society. My name is K. Quincy Parker.
And I am Matthew B. Kelly.
Indeed. And Matthew, I reiterate, are you well? Are you...
Well, Quincy,
are
I'll
you
put
walking
it like this.
On broken glass, as Annie Lennox would say, or are you walking on cloud nine? Check
it out. Sometimes you just have to acknowledge in life that B is for bubble.
B is for
bubble.
Bubble, bubble, bubble. Bubble, bubble. B is for bubble and bubble gum. And B is your brother who brought you some.
B is
better than any letter.
B is for bubble.
For bubble gum.
So yeah, I guess I'm pretty good. Yes, life is often much more about how you take things than how things are. Okay. How are you, sir?
I have found myself in incredible circumstances lately. I have dined exquisitely. I have sipped magnificently. I have enjoyed tremendous excursions out into what some people call the outside. My work is rewarding and fulfilling. I seem to be doing well at it. I have lost a few pounds in my journey towards my Speedo deadline. So
fast approaching Speedo deadline.
Mm-hmm. It simply means that the things that have helped me to lose those pounds, I have to simply turn up the intensity. But I find myself of a mind to do so, which is more important to me than really even losing the weight. The fact that my intentions are changing, I suppose. So, all told, Matthew, I'm doing incredibly well.
And where exactly does this fine bottle before us fit into these plans?
So, there is a, I suppose there is an assumption, a supposition, a view, a belief. That a person who enjoys a fine tipple in the manner that we do could also be considered dissipate and dissolute. And neither of those things are necessarily true. Yes, there are some people who drink to excess, and I pray that they find healing and relief for whatever the trauma is that drives them to do so. But The reason that my bottles of scotch might last a little longer than someone else's is because, number one, I have a few different bottles from which I, you know, yeah. And number two.
So Matt's.
I plead the fifth. And number two, I don't drink all day, every day. I usually don't drink until right before bed. When my ritual is, I'll sit out on my porch with a book, a fine cigar, and a glass of scotch, or bourbon, or rum, or tequila, or whatever else might be catching my fancy on that day. And so it's very rarely more than two fingers of whiskey. So that is not a real finger on the scale, to coin a phrase. So I guess in moderation, that's where these bottles come in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you'd be surprised.
I mean, people say what they say.
I'm not trying to sway you. But,
no, no, no.
But,
yeah.
But for those out there listening, cutting back to once a week, having a dry month, etc.
All those things
will certainly not harm you.
Well, they're valuable.
Way to body recomposition.
Certainly, certainly. And I encourage all of those people who are inclined so to do so. I, however, have
leave me alone.
No, not at all. I have simply picked my poison.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me now, though, about this golden dram.
Yes. You have been underwhelmed by the entry level into this particular line. So the Balvenie single malt scotch, the Balvenie distillery is the Highland scotch that I like the best. And the one of the former brewmasters, master brewers, it was a former brand ambassador who had been visiting France, talked to the master brewer at the time, Dave Stewart, and said that he should experiment in his new cask line with the casks that used to hold French wine known as Pinot, as distinct from Pinot Noir or Pinot Gris.
Yeah,
Pinot is P-I-N-E-A-U as opposed to P-I-N-O. So it's two different things entirely. But to go back to the foundation of your question, you may remember when I started talking about the Balvenie casks, David Stewart came up with this idea, and he was the first of the master brewers to do it, to finish the whiskey in casks that used to hold other spirits in order to impart different qualities
now,
into
just
the whiskey.
Just so that I get my terminology correct,
mm-hmm.
You're saying master brewer.
Master distiller is what I should be saying, yes.
Okay. No, because I just didn't know if that was like two different stages.
Brewer is a beer thing.
Right.
Okay. Master distiller is the whiskey guy.
Okay,
I apologize for the miscommunication.
No problem. Yeah. I just want to be on the same page.
We are. We are now on the same page. What David did was all of the whiskeys that are traditionally aged whiskeys are aged in oak, whether that's American oak or French oak.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, in the bottle. In any case, it's American oak whiskeys, oak barrels. Sorry. So the finishing in the oak is one of the distinctive flavor imparters into the whiskey. It's why the whiskey tastes the way it does after sitting in the oak barrels for so long. Most American oak kind of gives, we talk about this when we talk about bourbon, you know, those almost vanilla-y overtones. And French oak, it gives a more minerally overtone, almost like stone, right? So what Dave did was to separate out older whiskeys, the 12-year-old, the 14-year-old, the 16-year-old, and the 21-year-old, and finish them in different casks. I'm assuming it was an experiment, but to my palate, it was an incredibly successful one. So the 12-year-old is a double cask. What that is it's American oak and French oak. The 14-year-old is the first cask is the American oak, as usual. Then the second cask is a cask that used to hold Caribbean rum. Mm-hmm. The 16-year-old, which is what we're having today, is the first aging is in the American oak, and then it is finished in the French Pinot casks. And the Pinot is a fortified wine that has like ginger and some other like fruit flavors that are kind of imparted into the wine. And so by aging in...
Is that just from the from the terroir of the...
No. It's the Pinot, P-I-N-E-A-U, is not a grape. The Pinot, P-I-N-O, is a grape.
Right.
But the P-I-N-E-A-U is a fortified wine.
Okay, so these are actual ingredients.
Yes,
right. Going in, okay.
Yeah. And so aging... Or finishing this whiskey in those casks is intended to see. Let's take a chance and see.
So you got like three, four layers of things happening here.
It depends. I mean, that's the goal, but you will have to tell me if it's successful.
There's definitely three or four layers because you have the cask itself. You have what was put into the cask before. Mm-hmm. You have a continuing reaction from the residue of that. You have now the whiskey, which was previously in a different cask, which is carrying flavors imparted from the, you said it started in American, right?
American oak, yeah.
Right, so it's pulling that over. So, okay, you know, 16 years. Now, how long does it finish in the finishing cask?
That is, it's not very long.
Okay.
It's because again, the goal is to while you're preserving the Balvenie flavor and the Balvenie profile, you're trying to complicate it enough that it's interesting without changing the profile of the whiskey too much.
Right.
So a couple of months, it's finished in the Pinot casks, and that's the story of the Balvenie 16-year-old French oak. I think the most important part of any whiskey story, of course, is the story it tells on your palate. So I would like to do the thing.
Which I wish I had a great cleanser for, but let's do the thing.
All righty. And I will pour for you first. Smell that already.
not until, we'll say like 8 inches. I think the air currents are probably pushing you away a little more.
It maybe.
I tell you what.
Because the second I smelled it.
It is everywhere now, though.
Yeah. Okay. I was, there's a word that I love. The word is pearl, P-U-R-L. And what it means is to gradually, you know, sort of meander into a medium. Like when you put a drop of ink into some water, it kind of pearls out into the water. You know what I'm saying? Mm. And I feel like the aroma of this whiskey just pearls out into the air, and it's just, it's so nice. Just on that first nose, I love it. Sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
Unfortunately, once again, I have to say, language is something that becomes more useful when the distinctions tie to experience. So that first bloom, I can't really describe it very well. And then on a snackin'. New word.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to have to
copyright that.
On the snackin'
sniff. I'm getting some classic apple. But this is definitely not on the nose something that I can't say this is bland or often encountered in my experience here on the pod.
Indeed.
So, setting up some interest right away. Now, that color, is that completely natural?
Yeah.
You know, that's into cider territory right there. That's a little bit dark golden. Dare I say amber?
I think you dare.
And I'm starting to wonder, because you've pushed these ideas of ginger into my head, if it has anything to do with that at all.
I don't think that would influence the color, but I mean, maybe.
So, shall we?
I think we should.
Every now and again, you sort of miss the mark in your throat. It went straight back. So what I'm reacting to right now is that, not not the actual beverage. So
take a second sip a little more carefully. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that is pleasant. That's like a walk through a meadow.
Mm-hmm.
Is what that is.
We can say that your first sip, and I put sip in quotation marks there, might serve the same purpose as... every once in a while, I'll go back to something Reed Parker shared with us, right? The way that he tastes his scotch is he'll take a sip not intending to actually taste the flavor, but just to coat his tongue, to coat his mouth with the oils, and to get the tongue ready to actually receive the whiskey. And then the second sip is when he starts looking for flavors. And I think that probably played out maybe unintentionally just now.
Unintentional.
But walk through a meadow sounds about right. So tell me more.
Yeah, so there are some green notes here. So slightly sharper, crisp bits. And I would lean a little bit into apple there, but there's certainly some earthy tones with it. So, you know, immediate ideas of grass. Not the taste of grass, but just the sort of the feeling of freshness that you get from there. But there are these softer notes which immediately bring to mind images of flowers. So imagine cresting a hill a gentle hill on an English meadow, dotted with various little, soft palleted flowers, you know, with a bunch of whites. That's where it takes me initially.
Okay.
Now, also, we spoke about that coating, right? Mm-hmm. That really smooths things over. Mm. And I think the first sip just for the coating works especially well here because the oils are very apparent, but super soft. So it's not as if they are sticky and getting in the way. They just sort of lay out a path. It feels like a gentle summer. You know those summer days where it's nice and it's warm? You're not going to feel cool, but it's not oppressive.
Mm-hmm.
So the humidity, you know, might be hitting high 60s sort of thing for those who pay attention to that sort of information.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Not like the last few days where we're finally in the 70s and dear God,
yes,
can I not wait for this to be over?
Yeah, and it's not going to be for a while.
Because I'm not body recomposing quickly enough
to make deal this with comfortable. This. Yeah.
Summer is here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. So, yeah, that's my little rant.
It is so hot, man. Oh, my God. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Like from 7 o'clock in the morning.
It's amazing 80 degrees at 70, 80% humidity and 80 degrees at 60%, 50% humidity.
Like, yeah, the difference is night and day.
Ugh. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, so... post-picnic stroll.
Ah. Okay.
That's how I'll sum this up.
Post-picnic stroll.
In what I have to believe is it's like to be in an English summer.
Mm-hmm.
Not too humid. I'm not going to say a Midwestern summer because I heard those things are brutal.
They have. I have experienced them. They can be... hellish, especially if more to the west than the mid part of it, Arizona and the dry heat. You know, oh my God. Anyway, so go ahead.
Third sip.
Mm-hmm.
I just got spicy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Golden sunset. Oh yeah. Now this. You know, memory is so fallible, but going from the feelings that I have of the last one in the series that we had here.
Mm-hmm. The 12-year-old double cast.
Night and day.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Night and day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm glad that you... okay.
This is list territory, sir.
After three sips, it's on the list.
Right. I mean... Shouldn't it be apparent at that point?
I am of the view that you are correct. I am so the tasting notes just right. So from the Balvini tasting notes, the American oak, it's 16 years of maturation in American oak casks, mm-hmm. brings an abundance of vanilla, spice, and warm honey notes. And then finishing in Pinot casks brings quote unquote energizing grapefruit, geranium, there's your flowers, glazed fruit, and ginger.
Hmm. Yeah, retrospectively, I'm not going to disagree with any of those notes.
Yeah.
They don't necessarily punch out individually at me, but.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things about a good whiskey is. Balance,
yeah,
right. Harmony. Yes, there are whiskeys that are dominated by one particular note. Like the heavily peated whiskeys are dominated by smoke. They're dominated by earth. The super bland Highland whiskies are dominated by that sort of rounded, buttery sugar. Mm. But after a while, it can get a little boring, right? But to me, and I think this is what David Stewart was after with finishing in different casks, is the idea of adding a certain something. One of my favorite words is ineffable, you know? And I feel like the finishing in the Pinot casks for this particular whiskey adds that certain ineffable something that takes it from being just a really delicious 16-year-old whiskey to being something worthy of being on the list because it's just that extraordinary. Now, the next in this series is the Balvenie 21-year-old Portwood. So it's a 21-year-old whiskey, aged 21 years in, you know, American oak, and mm-hmm. then finished in port pipes, which is what they call the barrels that that hold port. They call them pipes. And so,
yeah, imagine, that's generally French oak, isn't it? Or
no, port is Portugal. So
no, but I mean the wood that they use to age the port in.
Oh yes, so sorry. Right, my bad. Yes. Usually it's French,
but could be anything. These
it could
days.
Be anything.
Yeah.
Okay. I would have to do a little more research.
More important, there was port in there.
Yes, yes. Okay. I don't know if you
important.
I don't know. Ladies and gentlemen, a good pun is a thing of beauty. So just enjoy it. I'm trying to say, if you like this, I think the 21-year-old Portwood is, which is, to be clear, my favorite scotch of all time, period. The Balvenie 21-year-old Portwood is my favorite scotch. I want to say that clearly in case people think that I have strayed
Ladies,
from my roots.
Gentlemen. If it does not make the list,
if it doesn't make the list, it doesn't make the list.
Big fight in Bain Town.
I am fairly confident that it will make the list, but whether it makes the list or not, it is my favorite scotch. My second favorite scotch is a little more nostalgia-based than anything. It's the Oban 14-year-old. The Oban 14 is sort of the first single malt scotch that I tasted when I first started my scotch journey that I felt was like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. And then my third favorite is another nostalgia pick, the Laphroaig 10-year-old.
Sorry, it's so good. It's so good. And it continues to develop.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Matthew took a sip and looked confused.
Almost a coffee cake. So, like, there's a hint of cinnamon, but not in that sort of Christmassy, bordering, sickly, sweet. You know, it can't really be that as the spice that it is. But, you know the feeling that you get from that. Mm-hmm, no, mm-hmm, no, not like that. Like words escape me, but that sort of robust comfort you get from a good coffee cake.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what the show is all about.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think goodness. That you're marvelous, yes. I think that you're... I think that your evocation of a coffee cake is appropriate. Occasionally, I would use fruitcake to describe a whiskey, and you have an issue with that. But I think that this is on a higher order. We left the fruitcake behind, and we are now refined, a much more balanced,
I would say
a much more constructed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's much more structure, and there's a lot more of the... I hate to get technical, but it seems like there's more of the glycinated products there, right? The nice browned bits. Mm-hmm. but you were saying about nostalgia, which I really want you to finish, because there's a point and an example I want to bring up.
Yeah, I got you.
That I'm pretty sure you may initially disagree with me, but I think you'll come around.
We'll see.
Here's an example, right? That I think is driven by nostalgia in large part. It's not the only thing mm-hmm. that's driving it. But I think too much nostalgia is apparent and present. It would have been better for the Dundas to burn down than for it to have gotten the money for repairs before that happened. Don't cut that silence out. I want the listener to know this is your true reaction, is just that silence.
I would like for you to I would like for you to elaborate, Matthew. And let me just say before asking you to elaborate that I agree 100%. 100%. Please elaborate.
Okay.
My silence was not disagreement. My silence was, I know I'm going to toe the cut ass for agreeing, but I'm ready for it. Bring on the smoke, ladies and gentlemen. Bring it on.
Listen. The main theater was never built for what it was. For what it was used for, up to it being derelict, let's say. Because for many years, it has been unusable. For the amount of money that it is going to take to repair it, to the point at which it's usable, it's not getting better. It's not expanding in any way. Maybe they have some plans to make the foyer a little better or something. It's going to retain the same footprint. The roof is not going to change that much, right? The acoustics are not going to improve. Not that it's super terrible for just regular little plays, but I'm sure the music people have lots of problems with it. To get it back to mediocre, which, to be clear, is still the best stage in the Bahamas. Although, I don't know what the renovation in Freeport is like. So there's that caveat. The only reason you would keep that building instead of the rational and I don't even know what else to call it. Simple conclusion that building out a new building is much better in every way. Parking, accommodation of all the temporal arts, advances in design in terms of acoustics, but also in terms of the electronics, putting in off-grid electricity, all of this. Like, it's just reel it off, right? It would be much better to start from scratch. You don't have to rededicate the stage or the building to other people. They could remain. So the argument that, oh, this is XYZ stage, this is XYZ building or whatever. That doesn't have to change. Why would you keep this anchor around your neck and not elaborate a powerful vision to incentivize and inspire people to come to the cause? There are many reasons that could have happened. I guarantee you, nostalgia is entwined deeply into it. And this is not a mean thing to say. It would have been better for a fire to raise it to the ground and not give the option of trying to resurrect a dead thing. Is it completely dead? No, right? Let's not mince words. Let's not split hairs either. Also, I'll tell you this. If it had burned down 2 years ago, within 6 months they would have had the money to start phase one to rebuild. It wouldn't have taken them 3 years to get a little bit, well, not a little bit, a substantial chunk from the whole thing.
So
in so many ways, mm-hmm. it simply would have been better okay. had God intervened.
God, you, Matthew, calling for divine intervention, come now.
If Ezekiel could just have set up in the Dundas main building and called down the fire of God to make a sacrifice out of that building, it would have been so much better.
Okay, so for once, I am not the dramatic one. I suppose because this is your bailiwick, you have usurped my position as the resident drama queen. But okay,
I'll just give you a rest. That's all,
and I appreciate it. I really do. But let me be as. To quote my brothers, the Parker lawyers, let me be pellucid about my view on this. Firstly, you're right. Starting from scratch would have been better. Secondly, you're right. The reason that we didn't start from scratch must of necessity be tied almost exclusively, not exclusively, but almost exclusively to nostalgia. This is the theater where Bahamian theater happened. And that is a recognition of that is a beautiful thing. But it's also, as you say, an anchor around your neck. Thirdly, the only caveat that I would add is that the cost of a new building, no doubt, also played a significant role in the choice of trying to fix it rather than trying to rebuild. A new building is in the millions. The cost is the issue. All the other things are, I think, emotional responses. But I think the most logical response is it would cost too much to fix, to build from scratch, whereas it's a much more reasonable fundraising goal to restore the status quo as opposed to
it is a smaller fundraising goal. Well, I'm gonna attack these.
Fair enough.
Right?
It's a much smaller, and therefore for the severely abused arts community in the Bahamas, mm-hmm. a much more reasonable ask. and abused may be the wrong word, but let's say severely undervalued, perhaps.
Okay. I'm going to say a couple of things here that I want the arts community, particularly the performing arts community, to listen to. You don't have to agree with it, but hear me out on this, right? The first question is, why are you undervalued? Why is the perception of what you do so low? Is it solely on those who you believe should value you so much higher? Or is it something that has multiple components and our portrayal? I'm going to put myself in it, even though I haven't been practicing in a very long time. Is it our portrayal of this art sector that it is as at least partially to blame for this? My position is obvious. We are at least partially to blame. I think it one of the biggest ironies in the Bahamas, at least the bits that I care about, that the people who know so much about story suck so hard at marketing themselves. Not particular productions, but as an art form or set of art forms in their entirety, right? There are, listen carefully to me, storytellers, story makers. There are particular stories in the heads of people who you wish would understand you better and love you and give you money that you have the power. You are especially positioned to have the power to understand those stories, first of all, understand how can I approach this and change the story that is in these people's minds. That's the first bit. The second bit is, from my point of view, and I'm only one person and I haven't been practicing in a very long time, but you can tell this is stuck in my maw for for the longest. Okay? We are not a community. We are a population that does a particular thing. And if you listen to what I'm telling you, you will know the truth of it. You don't have to admit it to me or anybody else. You want to use the word community? Go ahead, right? But what I hear when you say community is functional community, and we lack that. What is a functional community? We can talk to each other. There are particular things that are available to us within the community. We commune, right? We have collective action on certain things. There are certain, be they either official or unofficial mechanisms to get things done, right? You think of a community, there's a store in the general sense, you know, there's somewhere to go for stuff. There's a police force, you know, so you take care of disagreements, etc. There's people who help, even if it's an ad hoc mechanism, to come and help you when your house on fire, etc., etc. There's this function in the community. Don't pretend like that's there. Don't do it. Not around me, who've been trying to assist in getting it to happen, right? And in the past, took too much upon myself. Okay? So when you use the word community, think very hard about how you do that. The next thing, in addition to there being no functional community, don't try to pretend with me like there's a vision. That falls flat with me. Okay? There may be aspirations in particular subgroups who think, oh, this is something that we really should aspire to. Here's a vision, right? No. And some of them know. They should know better. I mean to phrase it like that. Like, they know in the back of their minds, this is not what it is. But I'm just going to push that off, right? I'm going to push my better knowledge to the side because this here is comfortable. And I'm just going to continue with this. The next thing is, as a non-functioning community, right? We don't have mechanisms to assess and critique ourselves, to correct ourselves, to get better. Much is made about, and this word is bandied about a lot, about merit. Okay, no problem. I love meritocracy. There is such apathy in getting together and figuring out how this can objectively be shown to have merit or not, right? Setting standards, not that this person thinks or that person doesn't think should be, right? But that we could get some agreement on. Now, this is completely a rant for two reasons. One, it's moot no matter what. Second, the government is finally moving on making some of this moot with their own initiatives. Now, that's going to come with its own problems. I don't know that much about it. Frankly, I don't want to know that much about it because I'm burnt out from this. But I'm saying things, one, that I have to get off my chest, and two, may be useful to someone with more energy down the road. Okay? The last thing that I'll touch on, because there's so much to say, is that I'm not sold on the it would cost too much. Number one, yes, this funding goal is much smaller, right? It's also not inspiring at all. You ain't got my money. If I had excess at the moment, maybe I'd give you a little bit, right? But if you had some inspiring vision, you'd probably get my money and you'll get my dedication. And I'm not talking to anybody in particular right now or any one subgroup in the community, right? I'm not even talking to the Dundas board right now. I'm just saying this in general. Now, despite all what I said, I am still helping certain elements do certain things. I can't get away from it. It's in my nature. But the lack of cohesiveness also comes from, I want to word this carefully, not because I don't want to piss people off. I already pissed them off. Okay? Just because I want to be precise. It comes from a lack of the shared vision. Because even if you think you are superior in some way, even if that's just, I'm superior in fundraising, or I'm superior in this particular portion of the art, be it directing or costume making or being a dramaturgist or whatever, right? Once all of that aligns, it doesn't matter if you're superior to this one or the next one or whoever. All the efforts are going to go towards the new thing that we will build. Not let's fix this thing or there's this problem over here or Sally down the road, you know, that was a terrible show even though the most people showed up to those shows, yada, yada, right? And it goes on and on and on. And the reason is, again, we're going to have interhuman politics
no matter what. But if we don't have a shared vision that people actually buy in on, are inspired by, then it ain't nothing happening. Nothing happening. Okay? So all the talk about meritocracy is not going to mean diddly squat. So, the last thing is the building. And again, we can have this problem. Even if the Dundas ceased to exist, if the void swallowed up that 3-acre property, which, by the way, is the biggest asset in the performing arts population, to be precise, right? This is the biggest thing that we could leverage on as a potential community in a proto industry, right? Even if that just disappeared into the void, there was just a big pit there tomorrow, we'll have this problem all over again with the government. Where are they going to put theirs? How is it going to work? Yada, 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 yada. It's good that they're putting in some mechanisms, right? That doesn't mean there's a vision there. Certainly not one that a population would turn into a community over. But, keep getting distracted, I am not convinced that the building needs to cost millions of dollars.
Fair enough.
And you know, maybe we could get an architect to talk about it, but, you know, I've looked at it for a very long time and put it like that, mm-hmm. and it doesn't have to be. Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Let me take a sip of this and calm down, right?
And
you know what? If you all disagree with me or whatever, like Quincy is going to take most of the blows. I'm not on social media.
I'm sorry.
No, no.
Did you just set me up to take blows for you?
No.
I don't mind. It's fine.
I'm not setting you up. I'm saying that's what's going to happen because I don't go on and check this, that, the next.
Fair enough.
Okay?
It ain't like I'm all over social media either, really.
No one is going to email me about it because when someone want to rant, it's usually an on-the-spot thing. No one is going to sit down and force their thoughts into a rational series of of statements and then send it to me.
You don't know that.
So,
we'll see.
It'll be a pleasant surprise. Let me put it like that.
We will see.
You know what it is then? Then it's a discussion, and I'm fine with it. Right? And I'll bring up your points on the show even.
Anyway. I look forward to that.
Sipping my next sip.
Indeed. We are both tangentially members of that community. So I want to very clearly co-sign the things that you have said. And I welcome all the smoke. Whatever smoke is coming my way, bring it on. Ain't no shame in my game. But I want to now say, as we close this particular or particular chapter of the conversation, that I have enjoyed listening to you finally expound on the theater community and its foibles. This is an area that I have wanted to open with you for a while, but you are usually very cagey about it. So thank you for sharing your
old thoughts. Man shouts at cloud.
The thoughts and feelings of the co-host and host of the Sunday Scotch Society are definitely ours. I believe Dwight, the station manager at Guardian Talk Radio, would share them. So if he needs to issue a caveat, I'll let him do that on his own. Yeah, Dwight, I did that to you.
Lord.
But what are your thoughts? What are your closing thoughts about the Balvenie 16-year-old French oak?
It has a nice finish. Soothing in the after rant. And you know what? I hope that I can visit it on the overmorrow.
The Balvini 16-year-old French Oak is available in Nassau, obviously, since I have a bottle. It is a fairly pricey bottle as far as scotches in the Bahamas go. I got this one from one of the Titan hospitality outlets for $300 and change, which is, as I say, for a scotch in the Bahamas, that's at the upper end of the spectrum. So while it is available, and this, I only got it because that was the first time that I had seen it in the local market. And I had the place where I picked it up, I had them hold one aside for me. So if you see it and you have the $300 plus to spend, it is definitely worth the investment as far as I'm concerned. Matthew may have his own thoughts on that, but thank you very much for this conversation, for sharing. I appreciate that. And I guess I will talk to you again next week, next time, sometime soon, should the gods decide to spare our lives and the universe decide to allow us to continue existing, if the good Lord tarries and the crick don't rise, you know.
Ciao.
Check it out.